Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast. The RTC features only the best OTR on our live stream, where we also invite you to tune in and enjoy the Radio Book Channel and the RTC Music Channel, all found at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Weekly Download from the RTC, the Radio Theater Channel. This is a soap opera edition, and it's an interesting one, too, because we're going to have about an hour's worth of Perry Mason. Now, those of you who enjoy old TV obviously know who Perry Mason was. I think he's responsible for probably half the lawyers in the country today. But we have the radio Perry Mason. He's a little bit different from the TV Perry Mason, maybe a lot different. You can form your own impressions. We have four episodes from 1954 coming right up.
You know why Kate Beekman took a job in the nightclub operated by Gordon Weber. Kate was bitterly disappointed because she no longer follow her career as a dancer. And Kate is confident she can deal with any unpleasant situation which might arise. You know, too, that Kate is tragically mistaken. The very nightclub where she works is the secret headquarters of a crime syndicate. Gordon Weber is a member of that syndicate. And Kate herself is a stake in the hidden struggle between Gordy Weber and his rival in the syndicate, August Jansen. Of course, Kate doesn't dream these things. She doesn't hear what's being said behind the closed and locked door of Gordy's office, where Gordy looks up at Gus Jansen, grins, and taunts the bigger man.
Well, go ahead, Gus. Go ahead. Go ahead and ask me. Ask me how I'm going to prove I got Kate Beekman telling lies for it.
What?
Don't jump, Gus. It's only J.P. coming through the private entrance. Hiya, J.T.
Gordon.
Hello, J.T.
Hey, J.T., wait till I tell you.
Hello, August.
I'm having a little drink, boss. Fix you one?
No, thank you. I'm watching my weight.
Gus ain't having one either. But Gus ain't worried about his weight.
Gordy, be quiet. You boys have something to tell me.
Gordy has J.T. I'm not sure you guys go ahead.
Well, it's what I couldn't tell you over the phone, J.T., about Kate Beekman. She was right here in the office when you phoned.
Gordy.
No, it's okay, J.T. I told Gus you want me to get friendly with the kid.
I told you to keep it under your hat.
I'm sorry, J.T. I thought it was okay to tell Gus. I figured Gus is a member of the family. Well, I could cut my tongue out. But that's water over the dam. I'll remember next time. Anyhow, I'm getting results, boss.
Yeah, to what extent?
J.T., she's thinking about me. She's worried about me. She's lying to her friends to protect me.
That's a remarkable statement.
I'm a remarkable guy.
You have something to add to this, August?
Well, there's no reason for me to stick in my two cents.
Now, let's have it.
That's really nothing, J.T.
Stop that, August. The two of you were snarling like two strange dogs when I came in. Each of you feels he's put one over.
J.T., I didn't say that.
I know you, Gordy, and you, August. All right, August. You got something to say? Say it.
Well, I don't like to do this, J.T. It makes Gordy out a liar.
Say that.
Yes, sir. Well, on my way in the club, Miss Beekman stopped me. She wanted to talk.
Yeah.
Well, it's only the second time I've seen her, J.T., but I've been polite and respectful to the girl. She appreciates it.
Say that, too. What'd she say?
Well, she was worried and had something on her mind.
What?
She finally told me. Some big mouth has been flapping his jaws. Somebody's been talking about her. About her and Gordy here.
Huh?
Nothing specific, you understand. And I'm not saying it's Gordy who's been working his big mouth. I'm not going to tell you Gordy's a guy who has to talk big because he's such a little squirt. No, I'm not going to tell you that. But the fact remains Miss Beekman is unhappy because some blabbermouth's been talking about her and Gordy. That's why I can't understand Gordy saying the girl did a favor for him. What she said to me, she wouldn't give him the back of her hand.
Gordy?
Just a minute, J.T. Is that all, Gus?
That's all. I repeat it for what it's worth.
Yeah, well, you were right, Gus. It was worth just about 2 cents.
It isn't true, Gordy.
Well, now, I'm going to tell you. I could say Gus is a liar. How do I know what Kate told him? If Gus says so, I can't prove he's a liar.
Just as you can't prove the girl did you a favor.
I don't like to contradict you, J.T., but Yeah, I can prove what she did for me. Are her own words good enough for you?
Probably.
Well, I just happened to have a recording of what she told me not an hour ago. I got a tape recorder hooked up to my desk. You want to hear the tape, JT?
Yes, Gordy, if you please.
Okay. Oh, Gus, if you don't want to hear this...
You listen. Play it.
Okay, JT. Look, this happened when Kate came in my office a little while ago. I saw what she was leading up to, so I reached to my desk and switched on the recorder, just so I'd have proof. Well, you listen to it. What were you saying, Katie?
I did come to you for help, Mr. Weber.
Okay. Any way I can help you, you just tell me.
Well, it concerns both of us. Mr. Perry Mason phoned for reservations opening night, and I happened to...
Well, what'd you tell him?
Well, I knew you didn't want him to see you, so I told him there weren't any more reservations.
Katie. And?
Well, I knew he'd be certain to see you opening night, and there might be trouble if Mr. Mason... So anyway, I told him there weren't any reservations for opening night.
Well, thanks, kid. But that still leaves us a problem.
Yes. Mr. Mason will probably come here sometime, so I thought... Well, I mean, later on, if you'd tell me a night you wouldn't be here, I'd ask Mr. Mason to come out. I'm sure he'll only make one visit.
Well, you heard the way it is, J.T. Did you hear it, Gus?
We both did.
Sure, and you see what it means, J.T.? It means more than she just did me a favor. She told a lie for me. She lied to her friend for me. That puts her and me on the same side, see? It puts her and me working together, close together, against other people. Now, what I'm saying...
You don't have to draw me pictures, Gordy.
Yes, sir. Oh, just one more thing, J.T. About what she told Gus. Well, he says she told him. I'm not going to say one word about that, not one way or the other. Maybe she asked him to marry her, I don't know. But I ask you, did that girl sound like she's mad at me?
I suppose you answer that, August. You got anything to say, August?
J.T., I... No.
Well, then suppose you wait outside. I've got some confidential matters to discuss with Gordon.
J.T. Okay, whatever you say.
Wait. I know how you feel. I know you, August. You start drinking now and you're washed up. Washed up all the way. You hear me, August?
I hear you, J.T.
All right. Wait outside while I talk to my second in command.
Meanwhile, many blocks away, as Perry Mason and his secretary leave a courtroom in Civil Court Building...
There they are, Perry. Perry, you're walking right past the phone booths.
Hmm? What, Della?
Well, you're going to phone the nightclub, aren't you? The nightclub where Kate Beekman is working, and where she told you there aren't any more reservations for opening night.
I know the place you mean.
Well, I was beginning to wonder. Oh, maybe you're planning to use Jake Jacobson's reservation, hmm?
I don't know. I don't like taking Jake's reservation.
False pretenses?
Well, yes, in a way.
Would you like me to phone Perry?
No, I'll do it. Just a moment. This Tony's nightclub. I would like to make a reservation for two, please. Yes, for dinner. I'd like it for opening night, if that's... Well, are you sure you... Oh. Well, you must have had some cancellations. Well, I was under the impression you were completely booked up on opening night. Oh, no, just something I heard. Oh, the name, yes, Smith. John J. Smith. Yes, that's right. They have a number of reservations available.
Oh?
So they gave another to John Smith.
That you?
Yes. Kate lied to us.
I wonder why.
Well, we'll find out, Della.
Everything has been going smoothly for JT's syndicate and for Gordy Weber. There's hardly a cloud on Gordy's horizon. But as you just heard, a storm is building up just over Gordy's horizon. You know there'll be fast action and exciting developments in the immediate future. So you'll join us on Monday, won't you?
Welcome to Curtis's Kitchen. Today we will cook my Curtis savory turkey.
This stuff is good. Just another drink.
Ready? Let's begin. Turn on your oven. I'd like to quick cook the bird at 500 Fahrenheit. Coat turkey with flour and drizzle on my savory gravy. Here's how we make it. This stuff is great. Mix 2 cups of sugar and 1 pint of vinegar, then dust with my secret weapon, 1/2 box of rock salt. Stir until slightly stiff.
Pour out of me. Just another swig.
And here's a reminder. I find that cooking my turkey turns out better with a good red wine like this $5 Merlot. Skip the formalities. I drink it straight from the bottle. Oh. Now back to our bird. Let's pour the savory gravy over the turkey and rub it in just like the barbershop and pop it into the oven. Cook for a short while. This is about the best sheep Merlot I've ever had in a long time.
Pour out a minute. Just another swig.
What? I must have dozed off. Well, it's time to taste our bird, and... Oh, well, as you can see, it's a little overcooked. Oh, it's black and, it's quite hard, but waste not, want not. Take this sledgehammer and there you have it. Curtis's crushed charcoal fragments. These babies will get your car in and out of your driveway in the deepest snowstorm. That was a great $5 Merlot. I've got to get a case of this stuff. Join us next time for another Curtis's Kitchen.
It's immediately after the close of our last episode. As you know, there's been a sensational development in the trial of State versus May Grant for the murder of Marcel Blanc. As you know, 2 key state witnesses have disappeared. On hearing the news, Prosecutor Apt rushed over to the defense table, accused Perry Mason of being responsible for their disappearance, and...
Well, Mason? Well, do you have anything to say?
I say lower your voice, Mr. Apt. Judge Selby...
He's going to hear me, Mason, as will everyone in this courtroom, as will the Bar Association.
Perhaps, Mr. Mason?
Just a moment, Your Honor. Just one short moment, if you please. All right now, Mason. I'll give you one chance to tell me what you did with him.
I hate to spoil your fun, Apt. But I'm as surprised as you are. In fact...
Mason, are you going to deny that you knew...
Of course I knew about them. A matter of fact, I knew more about both of those witnesses than you did. I wanted them to testify.
What?
They're crooks, Mr. Rapp. Show the prosecutor that insurance report this week.
Yes, Mason.
What? What did you say? Crooks? Insurance report.
Your witnesses are crooks. They're wanted for bringing false suit against a Minnesota doctor. Now show it to him, Mr. Rapp.
Here you are, Mr. Rapp. Go on, take it.
Yeah. Names are different.
I think you will notice a resemblance in the photographs.
And the fingerprints, Mr. Abt. Don't forget the fingerprints.
The names don't matter.
A rose by any other name, you know.
Well, I must say, Mason, I must say. Looks as if I owe you a debt of thanks. Yes, it looks as though I do.
Well, you can skip the debt. But if I were you, I'd go tell Judge Selby and then get on with this.
Well, of course I will. Yes, indeed, I do owe you a debt of thanks. Well, if I had put them on the stand, I'd... Well, as it is, no harm's been done.
Except that Mr. Carlo doesn't have an alibi.
Whatever makes you say that, Miss Street?
Why ever wouldn't I say it? She's got no alibi. Her witnesses are gone.
Therefore, as you stipulated, Mr. Rapp, she is the prime suspect.
Oh, but you're wrong, Mr. Mason. Very wrong.
How?
Miss DiCarlo has an alibi. You don't think she had only one string to her bow?
What?
Oh, my, didn't you know about him? You mean you didn't know about Mr. Gadrades?
Another witness?
That's right, Miss Street, another witness. And a reputable witness. Well, if you'll excuse me, I'll go explain to Judge Selby.
How?
Well, first, of course, about the two witnesses who disappeared. Yes, I think I'll have him issue a bench warrant for them. Then I should explain that it's simply impossible for Mr. Gadrades to appear before this afternoon. So we'd best adjourn for lunch. What did you ask, Mr. Mason?
I asked how. How can you explain away a lying witness?
You mean Mr. Gadrades?
Mr. Rapp. If Gadrades alibis Kitty DiCarlo, he'll have to lie.
So you think, Mr. Mason.
I know it, as well as I know my own name.
Well, then, Mason, I'm certainly happy you aren't on the jury. Oh, very happy. Now, if you'll excuse me, please. Oh, and, Mr. Mason, thanks again. I mean it.
Meanwhile, in an old apartment building many blocks away, the witness, Valeria Gadrades, slowly climbs the stairs to the fifth floor.
Mama!
I heard you on the stairs, Papa, so I opened the door for you.
What were you doing near the door? Something happened. Our daughter?
Sleeping. That is sleeping now. The doctor...
Doctor?
I had to get him. Oh, Papa, you should have seen her. I was so frightened. But the doctor gave her an injection.
Oh. What happened?
She tried to walk again this morning.
Oh.
I didn't know until I heard her fall.
Is she? When she fell, did she hurt herself?
No. The doctor does not think she harmed herself.
But the pain, what
the
about...
The old injury. He said something else.
Yes?
Papa... She has to have the operation, not just for the pain, not just so she can walk.
Huh?
He used words I would not understand, not even in our native tongue.
Shh.
No one here is Nara.
Still, you must not mention. Tell me about the doctor.
She must have the operation soon, Papa, or there may not be time.
She will have her operation.
What?
She will be well. Our girl is going to have the same chance as other girls.
But the money, Papa...
We will have the money. And our daughter will have her operation.
Soon, Papa?
Within the month.
How?
You must ask me no questions.
But, Papa...
No question, no.
Papa.
If I speak harshly, if I seem not to be myself...
I will try to understand as I have understood before. After all, I am your wife. The wife of Gadrates, if that is a name we must...
Don't say that.
Gadrates or any other name. Papa, Papa, can't you understand? This is the United States. We can talk as we wish. We can say what we wish. No one hears us in our own apartment. And don't you forget that. So now you are hungry. You sit down and I will make lunch and we will talk.
No, there is nothing to say. Only that she will have the operation. And that you must never mention... Never say a word about it until...
Talk is nothing if she is going to be well. That is all I care for.
I too. I must prepare to go.
And you must eat first.
No, I'm not hungry.
Papa, to bear witness will be hard.
I can't eat.
Then coffee. I will heat your coffee.
Please.
And you will drink coffee, Gadrates, or you will not go to court. You will not be witness at any trial. You hear me?
Yes, Mama.
I'm sorry you have to go to court. I'm happy at what you just told me. So happy. It is a big thing to be told all at once.
Yes. A big thing.
Papa, you're not happy.
No questions.
All right, no questions. Sit down here, no questions, Gadrates.
It is not a joke, Mom.
Oh? It is not a joke. My man brings the most wonderful news I've heard since we entered this country. And I must not be gay. It is to laugh and joke and sing.
No questions, Mama, please.
All right. No questions. But why, Papa? The news you brought is what we've longed and dreamed for. And yet you're sad.
I can't explain the sadness.
After the trial, perhaps.
Oh, yes, the trial. Oh, Pop, I understand. Oh, your clumsy wife. Of course you are sad. It is what you have to do that bears so heavy on you.
It is all right.
I wish you did not have to bear the witness.
I must.
To speak the truth is sometimes hard. It's a sad burden to carry.
Mama, please.
By the papers, what you say will prove the guilt of Mrs. Grant.
Mama, I do not carry the burden alone. There are others who
No.
Huh?
You do not know.
No?
It is best that you should. I'll pour your coffee then.
No, what, Mama?
Wait. Mrs. Kaczynski told me a few minutes ago. Drink your coffee.
Mrs. Kaczynski, what about it?
Eat, Papa. And here's sugar for your coffee. Mrs. Kaczynski heard it on her wireless. The others have gone away.
Who?
Eat, Kadratis. The other witnesses who saw Mr. Carlo. They cannot be found.
So
it is all on you, Papa. Poor man. And poor lady.
What?
Poor Mrs. Grant, she will have to die.
Stop!
I will say poor lady. Even if she is guilty, she is a poor lady. So sad and so sweet looking in her picture.
It is not for us to question.
To question, no. To pity, yes. And the little girl.
We have a little girl.
What?
We have a little girl. Pity her.
Larry.
I have pity and thoughts for my little girl alone. I cannot eat.
Papa.
I must go. And do not speak of the other again.
As you wish.
Do not speak. Never speak. Do not say those names again.
His wife can guess, because not only the operation, but the very lives of his beloved wife and daughter depend on Gedrades following Anna B. Hurley's orders. Yes, Valeria Gedrades knows well that in order to preserve his own family, he'll have to doom May Grant.
Garden of Weeds by Professor Kevin Curtis. Good morning, students. Among my many talents, as many of you know, I am a gardener. I decided to develop the Curtis petunia. I worked that garden for weeks. Weeks, I tell you. Oh, the petunia would grow, but it had black spots on its petals. It's maddening. But in my garden, right next to the petunia, a weed developed and grew. It was green. It was healthy. Ah! As my petunia shriveled, the weed grew big and green, and the ugly thing became beautiful to me. Yes. Look! Look! The bright green leaves! Ah! The bright yellow petals! Ah! I threw the petunia away. Ladies and gentlemen, may I present the Curtis dandelion? Well... Class dismissed.
It's mid-morning, shortly after the close of our last episode, as Gus Jansen drives quickly to the nightclub headquarters of J.T. Dougherty's crime syndicate. More of Gus and Kate Beekman in a few moments. First, at the Barclay Mansion, Suzanne's mother is admitted by one of the police guards on duty, goes directly to Suzanne's room.
Mother?
Yes. I want to talk to you, Suzanne.
I was just looking out the window. They're going to bring Bebe home from the veterinarians. Didn't I see Jerry drive you home?
Yes. Which window?
This one. The police sergeant said I don't have to keep the curtain drawn on this window. I have to keep the rest of them closed.
It's too bad you can't let in the sunlight.
Yes.
It's a lovely day outside. But you wouldn't know that.
I can't go out, Mother. I don't dare.
Suzanne, I just talked to Mr. Mason.
Yes, Mother?
He told me why you're afraid.
Of course I'm afraid of Gus.
I was puzzled when your uncle told me you refused to help Mr. Mason.
Mother, listen.
I should have guessed the answer myself. Gus threatened me, didn't he?
Please, Mother.
Didn't he? Before you ran away.
No, he didn't.
Now, don't lie to me, Suzanne. That's why you ran away. You didn't dare come back until you thought I was beyond his reach.
Mother, if you'd only listen to me.
There's no use denying it, dear. I know Gus threatened to harm me if you reveal his identity. You're being a coward, Suzanne.
Mother.
Suzanne, I never thought I'd see the day I was thankful your father isn't here.
Oh.
You've kept your father enshrined in loving memory, Suzanne. And of course, I'm glad. As you grow older, you will learn your father wasn't perfect. No man or woman is. And yet your father, more than most, earned the loving memory of those who knew him. He wasn't a coward. I was a coward. I used to be afraid for you.
For me?
Yes. As every mother fears for her children, I used to be a coward about you. I wanted to smother you in safety. But your father taught me to let you live and grow outside my fear. If I had understood more clearly what your father tried to tell me, you might never have become involved with Gus. If I hadn't stood between you and life, you might have learned to guard yourself from danger. Suzanne, when you have children of your own, you will learn. If you truly love them, you can't take all risks for them. Do you hear me, darling? It's a shame for anyone you love. Your children, your husband, your parents. Me.
Oh, Mother.
You've no right to keep silent in order to protect me.
But I...
You've no right, Suzanne. You've no right to ruin your own life in a foolish effort to protect me.
Foolish?
Worse than foolish.
You don't know him, Mother. Gus would stop at nothing.
The police will stop him. The house is guarded.
You don't know him, Mother. He'd find a way.
I know Perry Mason.
What?
I know Perry Mason, and so do you. Do you trust Mr. Mason? Do you believe what he says?
Oh, yes, I do. Mother, did Mr. Mason promise you'll be safe?
Why, yes.
Really? Really and truly?
Yes, he did.
Well, if Mr. Mason can promise you'll be safe...
Now, don't answer me now, darling. Think about what we've said.
Yes, I will.
And remember... You've no more right to stand between me and danger I must face than I have to take all risks for you.
You said that Mr. Mason promised you won't be in danger.
Yes, but even if I were...
You said Mr. Mason promised. Now, didn't he?
Well, yes. He said there's no danger. I'll be in my room when you want me. Make up your mind quickly. This is Mrs. Barkley, Miss Street.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Barkley.
May I speak to Mr. Mason?
Well, he's in conference again, but if it's necessary...
Oh, never mind, Miss Street. You can give him the message.
Yes?
I just spoke with Suzanne.
Oh?
She hasn't given me her answer, but I know my daughter. She'll make up her mind more quickly if she's left alone.
Do you think she will make up her mind?
Yes.
To give Mr. Mason Gus's identity?
She's coming back to normal, Miss Street. When I came home, she informed me her dog is being delivered from the veterinarians. I think she's beginning to lose her unreasonable fear of Gus. I suggest you ask Mr. Mason to place himself in readiness to use her information.
Yes, of course. Just a second. Here he is now. Perry, Mrs. Barkley's on the phone.
Yes, Mrs. Barkley.
I spoke with Suzanne, Mr. Mason. You're only in to wait until she thinks over what I told her.
And then she'll talk?
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Good.
I'm afraid I spoke a little harshly to her. But after what you told me, I was justified.
What?
When you told me that she is in danger as long as Gus is free, in spite of the police guarding her, I'd say anything to make her safe. She'll be safe when Gus is behind bars.
Yes.
Then I'll do anything to make her help you find him.
Anything. Mrs. Barkley, you explained you will be in danger after she talks and we go after Gus.
What?
You made her understand you will be in danger, but that you are willing to accept the risk.
Why, yes, of course.
There is a risk.
My danger will be no greater than hers.
No. But you're in no danger as long as she doesn't talk. You will be in danger, as I explained to you. And I cannot guarantee your safety.
I know what I'm doing, Mr. Mason. I know Suzanne must talk so you can apprehend Gus. And Suzanne will be safe. I knew just what to tell her, Mr. Mason. You'll see. Because of what I told her, Suzanne will tell you the truth.
But meanwhile, in the nightclub headquarters of the syndicate, Gus Jansen is speaking quietly over the telephone.
J.T., I've only got a second because Kate Beekman is on her way to the office. But I want you to know I'm going to get that message to Suzanne Barkley. Well, you never knew it, but Suzanne had a little dog before she ran away. She had it when I used to be friends with her. Yeah, I gave her a present for the dog. I gave BB, that's the dog, a special dog collar. It's got a locket on the collar. A locket you can open up, see? Well, the dog's been staying at the vet's, but they're taking her home to Suzanne. And when they do, and when Suzanne looks inside the locket, she'll find a message from me. A message telling her to phone me at our place. Yeah. Our place is a roadhouse called the Horse and Carriage where I used to take Suzanne for dinner.
Gus?
I gotta hang up, J.T.
Oh, hello, Kate.
Hello, Gus. You want to see me?
I always want to see you, Katie.
Oh? I mean for a particular reason.
Well, so do I. I always want to see your beauty.
Really?
You're as lovely as a day in spring.
Oh, so that's it. In the spring, a young man's fancy
lightly turns to thoughts of love. Now, that's undoubtedly true, but this guy's fancy is turning to a charcoal broiled steak.
Oh?
Miss Beekman, I'm going to tell you a secret.
Oh?
I know a little place hidden away on a side street. It's called the Horse and Carriage. The Horse and Carriage serves the best charcoal broiled beef steak you ever put in your mouth.
Tender, you say?
As a maiden's dream.
Oh.
And I was thinking, why don't you and I try it?
Oh, I have to work.
Oh, it's such a wonderful spring day, and it's time for you to have another driving lesson.
Gus, I'm supposed to work.
And those steaks are so tender. Have dinner with me at the Horse and Carriage.
I'm supposed to work.
Miss Beekman, you are hereby given the evening off.
Okay, I'll go.
Okay, Suzanne.
What?
I said, okay, madame. We've got a date with a steak.
Gus Jansen is absolutely confident Suzanne Barkley will read his message. He's confident he can seal Suzanne's lips. As you know, there'll be vitally important developments in the immediate future. So you'll join us tomorrow, won't you?
Northwest Ho. I walked in the woods of the Northwest. Lakes, trees, rivers. It was all there. Look, furry little animals. All is serene. All is truth. All is quiet. I am at one with nature. Look ahead. A clearing. Stop then. Totem poles. It's a Stonehenge of totem poles. Ah. Let us contemplate the pole. There's a bear. There's a fish. Oh, look, a big eagle. What? On top of the pole? My face? I move on through the forest.
It's a little past six in the evening, immediately after the close of our last episode. And in a small town a few miles south of Baltimore, the car belonging to salesman Norris is pulled off the side of the road. And Norris himself stands in front of his car, arguing heatedly with another man over the wreckage of a child's wagon. While inside Norris's car, we hear...
Well, I've got to straighten this out, Bella.
Oh, Perry, I wish you didn't have to get mixed up in
it. Well, the way Norris is handling it, he'll get us mixed up with the police.
You just try it, mister. Just try it. I'm going to call the law, and you just keep talking. I'm taking your license number.
What's the matter, Norris?
Oh, this guy's acting tough, mister Smith.
I'm insisting on my just right.
But I couldn't help hitting your kid's wagon.
We'll let the law say about this.
Won't listen to reason. Now, come on, let's go. This fella's crazy.
You just try to drive off. You won't get out of the county. I've got your license number.
What?
Well, wait a minute, Norris. Now, you let me talk to him,
we'll
huh?
We'll let the law decide. I'm standing up for my rights. I'll call my brother.
Well, what's your brother got to do with it?
He's a constable.
Your brother's the... Oh, no.
Just a minute, mister.
Huh?
You better call a lawyer before you call anybody.
I don't need no lawyer.
Well, yes, you do. You're in trouble.
I'm in trouble? When you ran over my kid's wagon?
You don't know much about legal liability.
Well, maybe I don't know big words, but now my brother...
Well, let me tell you something.
Yeah, you go on and tell him, Mr. Smith.
See, it's your responsibility to keep your child's toys off public streets. Now, this is a public street. And that wagon rolled right in front of this car.
Are you trying to say I'm responsible?
The law says you are.
Well, my brother's the law in this here town.
Mister, the laws of public liability pertain in any man's town.
Well, go on, Mr. Smith. You tell him. You go right ahead and tell him.
Now, this wagon here created a public hazard. Yeah, you can be held liable for damages to this man's car.
What?
You can't?
So, you tried to cause trouble for us.
I can make him pay for my car?
Yeah, you could.
Well, now, look. Now, you just look here, mister. Look how the paint's all scratched up and the radiator grill's all bent.
Now, you two fellas are trying to fast talk me.
Oh, now, wait.
There must be $15 or $20 damage to my car.
Be quiet.
Say, what are you, mister? A lawyer?
No, I'm a guy who likes to avoid trouble.
You talk like a lawyer.
Never mind that. Now, let's get down to Casey.
Well, I ain't paying you no money. I'm going to call my brother.
Let me finish. Now, we don't want no trouble. And neither do you. So I'm willing to be fair.
Fair? How do you mean?
Yeah. Hey, do you think this will cover the cost of a new wagon?
Hey, $10. And look at the wad of money in that wallet.
You're giving me $10?
Yeah, to get your child a new wagon. Is that satisfactory?
Yeah, sure.
Well, then it's all settled. Now, you better go tell him.
Yeah. You're a square shooter, mister.
Hey, what about all this junk here?
You keep it. You paid for it.
All right, Norris, let's get rolling, huh?
Oh, now, wait a second, Mr. Smith.
Huh?
You got us out of that jam awful slick.
So?
Awful slick. Now, if you hadn't have stepped in, well, we'd have got all tangled up with the police.
Well, we're all cleared now,
well,
so...
Well, now, wait.
What's on your mind?
Is what you said true about that guy's responsibility?
Maybe I was bluffing.
Oh, no. You knew what you were talking about. Now, you know the law, just like a lawyer.
Norris.
What about damages to my car? Maybe I should stay and make him pay. Or maybe you don't want to talk to the cops, Mr. Smith.
So that's it?
Well, now I'm just a poor man, Mr. Smith, and I'm saving you a lot of money. Carrying you with me all the way to land.
Yeah, but we're not there.
Yeah. And you got a lot of money in that wall of yours, Mr. Smith.
Meaning you want me to pay for the damages to your car? Is that it?
Well.
Here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Smith. Hey, that's only a dollar bill.
Yeah, to cover the damage to your car. Those other dents are old ones.
Oh, smart guy, huh?
I'll get along.
You're not the only smart guy, Mr. Smith.
Look, Norris, let's get going, huh?
Okay. But let's stop and eat. There's a good place just down the road. Robbie Lee's roadside restaurant.
Just down the road?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll drag this junk out of the way and put it beside the road.
But I'll see you in the car.
Thank heaven you got
it. Norris is pretty sure.
Perry.
And with a $1,000 reward riding on my neck.
Norris is money hungry. Perry, what are we going to do?
I think I know what he's up to.
Well, I don't.
Well, I can't explain to you now, but whatever you do, follow my lead. And follow my lead exactly, Della.
This is Robbie Lee's restaurant.
Well, if the food tastes just half as good as it smells.
Oh, it's just as good. A little expensive, maybe, but Mr. Smith don't care about that.
Oh, there's a table over there.
We'll have to wait to get served, but that'll give us a chance to talk.
Well, that's good, because we want to talk to you, too.
Yeah. Well, after I've had my seat.
Well, you better hear me out first. We've reached the end of the line, Norris.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, we decided this is as far as we go. Sally and I have made up our minds to strike out in a different direction. Ain't we, Sally Lou?
Huh? Oh, yes, sir, we sure have.
Oh.
What does that mean?
Going to Denver after all, huh?
Denver?
Well, that's where they thought you wanted to go.
Who's that?
Why, the police, Miss Street.
Oh.
Well, I'm glad you see I'm too smart to be fooled anymore.
You know, evidently, you got us mixed up with some other
people. Oh, now, don't start that, Mr. Mason. I should have known when I first saw you.
Norris.
And when I heard you laying down the law to that fella back there, all of a sudden...
Norris, your thoughts are your own concern. As far as we're concerned, this is the end of the road.
Uh-uh. Now, you know better than that. There's a little something to settle first. Okay, I'll say it. What about that reward?
What about it?
Well, when a public-spirited citizen puts up $1,000 to know where you are...
If I'm making...
I figure it's my duty to let her know. Uh-huh. Now, I'm a public-spirited citizen, too. Besides, I'm just a poor guy trying to get along, and... Well, I've been thinking.
Go on.
I'm a reasonable guy.
I'm waiting.
But if I keep my mouth shut, that $1,000 just flies out the window. Unless...
Unless I come up with the money, in which case you would keep your mouth shut?
That about covers it. Now, don't think of getting tough. All I have to do
is... I wasn't thinking of getting tough. I think maybe you have a reasonable proposition.
Oh, Perry.
We have to deal with him, Della.
Now, that's being smart.
Only, Mr. Norris, if I give you the money, how will I know that you keep your mouth shut?
Oh, you can trust me. Now, you just hand over that...
Wait. There's a little string attached.
Yeah?
We want you to take us back to Baltimore.
Well, what kind of a chump do you take me for? You think I'd go anywhere with you after holding you up for $1,000?
Now, look here, Norris.
Now, you look. You just peel me off $1,000, and you go your way, and I'll go mine.
And how do I know that you'll keep your end of the bargain?
Why, I'm giving you my word.
Ha!
Mm-hmm.
But it's up to you. Now, I can tip off the police right now and make $1,000, or you can give it to me. I don't care. You just make up your mind.
Doesn't seem there's much choice.
Now, you're being smart.
Just the same.
Why?
You start passing around that kind of money in here, somebody is sure to notice it, so let's step outside.
Yeah?
Just out in front. Nothing can happen to you.
Is this a stall?
What, are you too lazy to step out in front for $1,000?
Well, you try something and I'll yell.
Now, you're stalling.
Oh, we can wait a minute.
Where are you going?
I want to use that phone a minute to call my wife. I just happened to think I promised to call her right at this time. Now, don't look at me like that, mister. You can watch me. I'll be calling long distance.
I'll do better than that. I'll go with you.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. A man likes to speak to his wife personal.
Well, then wait until after...
Mr. Mason. Now, you get this straight, son. You're in a lock. You gotta trust me.
I do?
Yeah, or I'll turn you in. Now, you just stop worrying. I'll be right back.
Perry, he's going to call the police. I just know he is.
Watch him.
Why, he is dialing long distance.
Yes, which means he's too smart to call the local police.
What?
We're only 10 miles from Baltimore, but he'd have to call long distance to call the Baltimore police.
Oh.
And if that's what he's doing, we're in a spot.
Isn't there any way...
I'm sure I'm not going to hold still for Norris's trap. Now, look, Della, the next 5 minutes are the payoff. Now, listen, and listen well. This is what we're going to do as soon as Norris steps out of that phone booth.
Well, Mr. Norris considers his position most fortunate.
He stands to make $1,000, maybe 2,000, if Mason pays off and Della's suspicions are correct. But you've just heard Perry Mason say he doesn't intend to hold still for Norris's trap. And yet, what can Perry Mason do? Well, we'll learn tomorrow, so won't you join us?
Well, what was your impression of Perry Mason on the radio versus Perry Mason on TV? We had a chance to hear four episodes from 1954 of Perry Mason, and interspersed between them, Kevin Curtis's contribution to radio. Now for something a little more conventional, two episodes of Ma Perkins. The chapter is unknown, other than they are numbered 14 and 15, so let's go to Ma Perkins Lumberyard and check things out.
The following program is transcribed. For a wash that's sparkling clean with less rinsing work, use new deep cleaning Oxidol. With just one rinse, Oxidol is deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. Oxidol's own Ma Perkins. Ladies, there's a lot of talk today about new improvements in wash day products, but today I have still more interesting news for you. News about amazing new Oxidol. Now, you've heard all about the new no-rinse suds, but common sense tells you that no-rinse suds just can't get out all the dirt. You've probably tried the no-rinse suds and found out through personal experience that they always leave in a certain amount of graying dirt. That's what makes the news about new Oxidol all the more amazing. New Oxidol saves you rinsing and gets out the graying dirt, too. It's designed so that it can get clothes deep clean with just one rinse. Yes, with just one rinse, new deep cleaning Oxidol gets out graying dirt that no rinse suds leave in. Not only that, but with just one rinse, new deep cleaning Oxidol washes clothes cleaner of dulling film than any other leading soap with two rinses. Now, Oxidol can do this because it reaches deep down into the fibers of clothes, loosens dirt, lifts it up, and floats it away. Clothes come out really clean, deep clean, gloriously white, beautifully soft, wonderfully sweet-smelling. And Oxidol is wonderful for washable colors, too. Yes, deep cleaning Oxidol and just one rinse is truly safe. So discover this amazing new deep cleaning Oxidol next wash day. With just one rinse, it gets out graying dirt, washes clothes cleaner of dulling film than any other soap with two rinses. With just one rinse, your clothes look clean, feel clean, smell clean, because they are clean. Oxidol deep clean. Ask your dealer for this amazing Oxidol in the same familiar package. Remember, with just one rinse, Oxidol is deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. And now for Ma Perkins. Well, to all outward appearances, there's a romance between Spencer Grayson and our beloved Faye. No, let me put it even stronger. I think Faye has fallen in love with him. And as far as he has revealed himself, Spencer is deeply and genuinely attracted to Faye. Needless to say, Ma and the rest of the folks are hoping that this time at last, Faye will find what she's looking for. Well, let's join the folks now. It's just before lunchtime and we find our favorite threesome, Ma, Shuffle, and Willie, in the lumberyard office. Listen.
20 past 11, folks. Who wants to go to lunch first today? You want to go, Shuffle?
Don't make no never mind to me, Willie. You want to go to lunch first today, Ma?
Oh, Land, I don't know. Why don't you go, Willie? Anyway, it's Wednesday, Evie's day with the Jolly 17. Evie'd probably like it if you lunch early.
That's right, Wednesday, when my lunch is sardines out of a can. Okay, I guess I'll get started then.
You know, Willie, maybe we could work out some kind of a system where on Wednesdays you could have lunch with us. Make it easier on you and Evie both. Oh, here's a customer. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Take no customer, folks.
Look who? Madam President herself.
Hi, everybody.
Why,
hi.
Evie, dear.
Evie, within 6 minutes, I'll be at the house expecting some lunch.
That's what I'm here to tell you about, Willie. Today you can eat in the drugstore.
Oh.
I told you this morning, only I forgot. I got a 12 o'clock meeting with my standing committee.
With your standing committee, huh?
Uh-huh.
Well, it ain't 12 o'clock yet, so sit down, Evie.
Got to meet with her committee, so I got to get indigestion from stale sandwiches.
A minute ago, Willie, you was complaining how in your own home you'd only get sardines.
Oh, who can win? So that's what you come over for, Evie, to tell me no lunch at the house today, huh?
Well, that too, but mostly something else. Something important. More important than Willie's lunch.
More important than Willie's lunch. Wonderful.
Sit down, Evie.
Oh, have I got time to sit down? Oh, yeah, I suppose so, for a minute anyway. Well, it's like this, Mom. For days and days, the ladies have been calling me up. Or I'd meet them on the street or in the store. Two minds with but a single thought. And the same at all the meetings of the Jolly 17. The sole topic of discussion.
The sole topic? I'm not sure that I understand what you mean, Evie.
Well, I ain't told you yet. How can they help it? After all, they've been seen everywhere. To say nothing of that car. That great, big, beautiful car.
Oh, I'm beginning to see the light. Would this your sole topic of discussion happen to be a certain gentleman, Evie? A certain gentleman who his initials happen to be Spencer Grayson?
Naturally, it's Spencer Grayson. And now what do I find? I start out for the house for a nice, quiet little talk with my sister. I get there, and there's nobody home but Joseph. Joseph's sitting there in the kitchen eating his lunch, and he says Faye's gone ice skating again. She's gone ice skating with Spencer Grayson. Well, say something, somebody.
Well, I don't know what you mean, Evie Child.
Well, I mean everybody in town knows that Spencer Grayson is a big business executive. And what happens? Him and Faye go ice skating all the time. How does it look?
You're saying that's bad, Evie?
The reason everybody in town knows about Spencer Grayson's business is because a certain Evie Perkins Fitz has been telling everybody in town.
Well, Evie, Child, you mean that it ain't dignified that Faye and Spencer should go ice skating? But they like to go ice skating. Len, they went yesterday afternoon with Paulette.
Oh, ice skating, Ma. That's for kids. And the whole town will see them. But they should be going, well, I don't know, to Fort William for a matinee or tea dancing. Then a nice high-class meal in a high-class hotel. And they should go riding around in the convertible. What good is a big convertible if it just sits? Spencer Grayson comes from New York. He knows dozens of glamorous girls. How can Faye have any glamour if all they do is go...
Oh, Evie, no. Child, you've got it all mixed up. Mr. Grayson likes ice skating. You remember when he told us that Aunt had a winter vacation since before the war? Well, it's wonderful that him and Faye should find pleasure in something so nice and healthy, like ice skating.
Why, tarnation, Evie, if Spencer Grayson wants glamorous girls, what's he doing in Rushville Center? Don't you see, Evie, the whole reason he's attracted to Faye, it's because she's so different from them painted and powdered and phony glamour types in New York.
Huh? Say that again, Shuffle. Spencer Grayson is attracted to Faye. Why?
It stands to reason, Evie. Ma and Shuffle are 100% right. If Spencer Grayson wants tea dancing and matinees and all that stuff, he wouldn't come way out here to see Faye. He's a real fine guy, Evie. Probably all disgusted with that phony life and cafe society in a big place like New York. So it's natural that he should turn to somebody like Faye.
Is that the way it looks to you too, Ma?
Well, I believe the truth must be something like that, Evie. Mr. Grayson seems to be interested in Faye for herself. I wouldn't worry if they're going ice skating. In fact, myself, I'm real pleased at this ice skating.
Absolutely.
Not only absolutely, positively, too.
Well, then, you might express it like this. Real blasé and, what's the word I want? Yeah, disillusion. Real blasé and disillusion from his life among all them phony glamour girls, who they're only out after his money, Spencer Grayson turns to the sweet, wholesome home type, our own Faye. Yeah, sure. And that's the reason he don't even like to go out for supper in the evening. He's sick and tired of all that dining and dancing. She wants to stay right there and enjoy some nice home-cooked cooking.
Absolutely.
Positively.
Oh, wait till I tell the girls. Okay, Ma, Shuffle, Willie, I just thought I'd inquire, you know.
Yes, Evie, dear. But I believe you can really let matters rest in Faye's hands. Oh, well, here's a customer. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Hello. Oh, the whole family.
Why, heavens to Betsy Gladys.
Why, Gladys Hamilton. In just 10 minutes now, I'm going to be right at your house.
Hello, Gladys.
Hi,
Gladys.
Everybody. That's right, Evie. Mother's in the midst of preparations, which is the reason I cleared out.
Oh. I thought I might find a playmate. Does anybody have an idea where I might find Faye?
Faye's ice skating.
Oh, huh? Man, Gladys, I believe that you will find Faye over at Aunt Bessie's pond, a gun skating.
Ice skating. Oh, dear. Me with my well-known aversion to winter sports. By they, I take it you mean Faye and her friend, the City Slicker.
The City Slicker?
Oh, Gladys.
Why, Gladys, I don't know how I got the impression, but, yeah, I believe it was Faye herself who told me. I was under the impression that you liked Mr. Grayson.
Oh, gosh, I managed to say the wrong thing again. Well, I do like Spencer Grayson. I didn't mean anything serious when I called him a City Slicker.
Oh, of course you didn't, dear. How is your mother, Gladys?
Wait a minute, Ma. I'll bring back a full report on her mother this afternoon. Listen, Gladys. That expression, City Slicker, must have some reason for calling Mr. Grayson by such an expression. It worries me. A City Slicker, well, he's somebody who comes to the country to cheat the country people.
Well?
Well? What do you mean, well?
Oh, Gladys. All that isn't very kind of me, is it? And don't think for a minute that my friend Faye can't handle Mr. Grayson. She most certainly can. And for the best of reasons, too. She likes him very much, and he likes her very much. He does, you know. I think that Faye brings out the best side of Spencer Grayson's nature, which is a very nice side.
Well, now, Gladys, you're a real good friend of the family, and you're the richest girl in town and the most sophisticated and the most, well, almost everything.
Well,
but you,
Evie, you'll turn my head. I swear, folks, I did not come here to make cracks about Spencer. Really, I like him.
But you said several things, and I wish you'd explain them, Gladys.
Oh, dear. All right, let me gather my thoughts. Well, first of all, you must agree that Spencer Grayson is very successful in his business.
He certainly is.
All right. To be that successful, you must be very intelligent. And if you're intelligent, you're complicated. In a nutshell, I believe that Spencer Grayson has never quite known what he's wanted. He's tried all those New York sophisticated glamour girls. He's been disappointed. So now he turns to a very wholesome, happy character like Faye. And so help me, Hannah, that's all I meant. I hope they get married. I'm sure they'll be very happy. And I apologize if I gave any other impression.
Well, darnation, in a certain way, that's what Ma and the rest of us said just a minute ago. He's turned to Faye because he's tired of them other type girls.
Good. Then we're all agreed on the subject. And now let's talk about it no more.
All right, Ma. Only one thing. I wonder if any of us really knows Spencer Grayson. I wonder if Faye herself really knows him. There's more to Spencer Grayson, you know, than meets the eye.
Listen, ladies. With new deep cleaning Oxidol, you can save rinsing work and still get a sparkling clean wash. For this amazing new Oxidol is designed to wash clothes deep clean with just one rinse. Now think of it. With just one rinse, new deep cleaning Oxidol gets out graying dirt the no-rinse suds leave in. And with just one rinse, new deep cleaning Oxidol washes clothes cleaner of dulling film than any other leading soap with two rinses. You see, the new Oxidol reaches deep down into fibers, loosens dirt, and floats it away. That's why with just one rinse, your clothes look clean, feel clean, smell clean, because they are clean. Oxidol Deep Clean. And new Oxidol is wonderful for washable colors, too. So ask your dealer for this amazing new deep-cleaning Oxidol. Remember, with just one rinse, Oxidol gets out graying dirt and washes clothes cleaner of dulling film than any other leading soap with two rinses. With just one rinse, Oxidol is deep-cleaning. 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 And so that's Gladys Pendleton's opinion that there's more to Spencer Grayson than meets the eye. And Gladys is a most astute young woman. But it's Spencer himself who reveals more of his character to Faye tomorrow. But now this is Charlie Warren inviting you to listen again tomorrow to Oxydol's own Ma Perkins. Same time, same. The following program is transcribed. For a wash that's sparkling clean with less rinsing work, use new deep cleaning Oxydol. With just one rinse, Oxydol is deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. Oxydol's own Ma Perkins. Ladies, there's a lot of talk today about new improvements in wash day products, but today I have still more interesting news for you. News about amazing new Oxydol. Now, you've heard all about the new no-rinse suds, but common sense tells you that no-rinse suds just can't get out all the dirt. You've probably tried the no-rinse suds and found out through personal experience that they always leave in a certain amount of graying dirt. That's what makes the news about new Oxydol all the more amazing. New Oxydol saves you rinsing and gets out the graying dirt, too. It's designed so that it can get clothes deep clean with just one rinse. Yes, with just one rinse, new deep cleaning Oxydol gets out graying dirt that no rinse suds leave in. Not only that, but with just one rinse, new deep cleaning Oxydol washes clothes cleaner of dulling film than any other leading soap with two rinses. Now, Oxydol can do this because it reaches deep down into the fibers of clothes, loosens dirt, lifts it up, and floats it away. Clothes come out really clean, deep clean, gloriously white, beautifully soft, wonderfully sweet-smelling. And Oxydol is wonderful for washable colors, too. Yes, deep cleaning Oxydol and just one rinse is truly safe. So discover this amazing new deep cleaning Oxydol next wash day. With just one rinse, it gets out graying dirt, washes clothes cleaner of dulling film than any other soap with two rinses. With just one rinse, your clothes look clean, feel clean, smell clean, because they are clean. Oxydol Deep Clean. Ask your dealer for this amazing Oxydol in the same familiar package. Remember, with just one rinse, Oxydol is deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. And now for Ma Perkins. Well, yesterday, a very clever young woman hit the nail on the head. It was Faye's friend, Gladys Pendleton. She told Ma that there's more to Spencer Grayson than meets the eye. Do you think that Gladys is right, that Spencer's character is more complicated than Faye and the folks realize? On the other hand, he's certainly a most attractive, most successful, and pleasant young man. What do you want to happen? Well, right now, it's shortly before 9 o'clock at night, and Faye has a date with Spencer, who hasn't yet arrived. Ma's sitting alone in the parlor when Faye comes down. Listen.
Where are you, Ma? Oh, there you are.
Yes, Faye. Len, don't you look nice. Oh,
thanks. Spencer didn't telephone while I was upstairs, did he?
Telephone? No, the phone didn't ring at all. I was right here. Is he late?
I'm late, and he's later. 9:10. Golly, I hope that thing in New York worked itself out.
New York?
Oh, Spencer's having some difficulty. One of his business clients. The people say they want to talk to him. He's been on the long-distance phone all day, but when I spoke to him at 5 o'clock, he said they're still getting him lots of headaches.
Oh, that's too bad. Was that a car I heard pulling up in front of the house?
Well, maybe it's Spencer. Excuse me, Ma. Oh, yes, there he is. Oh, golly, now watch me get all female. I'll look down my nose at him and complain that he's late and he kept me waiting.
Oh, no, I don't believe you will. Would you like me to answer, dear?
No, I will. Then you won't hear my bad manners when I scroll.
Ah, Faye. We got us a nice girl, Pa Perkins.
This youngest of ours is a real nice girl.
Well, hello. Are you sure that you can spare the time?
Well, don't get fresh, darling. I have a million and one apologies, but if you get fresh, I won't deliver them.
Oh. You come on in the living room. It's the culprit, Ma. But he's so sweet and so polite, I can't feel that he's the culprit. So it's just mildly unpleasant to him.
Of course, when she's mildly unpleasant, the total effect is completely destructive. Good evening, Mrs. Perkins.
Good evening, son. Yes, Fay was ready about half a minute before you arrived. Oh. Instead of the other way around, like usual.
Yeah, you hear that, you minx? Your own mother says I kept you waiting only half a minute.
She's a cruel, cold mother, and I shall have to speak to her in private.
Are you in a hurry to go somewhere, Spencer, or would you like to take off your coat and sit for a while?
Well, that depends, Fay. Unfortunately, I have news for you folks.
News for us? I hope it ain't bad news, Mr. Gacy.
From my point of view, it's very bad news. You see before you a man trapped by his own talents and charms.
Trapped by what? Oh, Spencer, say it plain.
Trapped by my own talents and charms is what I said. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. We have this account back home. When we got it, my boss said, Spencer, make yourself indispensable to these people. And so I did make myself indispensable, and now I'm paying for it. They want to see me in New York on Monday.
In New York on... Oh, Spencer, no.
If you got to be in New York on Monday, that means...
Yes, it means I'll have to start back the first thing in the morning. Fay, I'm terribly sorry.
I'm sorry, too, Spencer.
Say the word, and I'll tell them to go take a jump. I'll tell them to run their stupid business without me.
Oh, you wouldn't?
No, perhaps I wouldn't. But I'd like to.
I just... remembered I left part of my sewing upstairs. So if the two of you will excuse me, maybe we could invite you to breakfast in the morning, young man.
Oh, here now, there's no need to be so tactful, Mrs. Perkins. Fay and I have no intention of driving you out of your own parlor.
Yeah, sit still, Ma. Don't be so diplomatic. If Spencer and I want to be alone, it's we who will leave. What do you want to do, Spencer? Yes, and can you come to breakfast tomorrow morning?
If I'm invited, I most certainly can. Have to be early, though. I'd like to be on the road by the time it's light.
Oh, Len, Joseph has his breakfast before 6. Why don't you just plan to be here by 6?
Thank you. I accept. First time in my life I've ever accepted an invitation for 6 o'clock in the morning. Overlooking certain invitations from the United States Army Air Force.
Well, that'll be fine. The front door will be open. You just come on in. But it's your last night in Rushville Center, Spencer. What would you like to do? Oh, golly, I'd have made some plans if I'd only known.
Do you know what I'd really like for the early part of this evening, Fay? Oh, later on we'll go for a walk or for a ride if you'd like to, but right now, you know what I'd really like best?
Tell me.
I'd like to sit here, take off my coat and sit here with you and your mother. Or maybe go into the kitchen. We'd all have some tea. Would that be all right with the two of you?
Linda Goshen. Well, yes, certainly. But, oh, well, maybe it's because you're tired.
Oh, of course, he's been taking care of all that business on the phone today.
Yeah, I am tired, but that's not the main reason I'd like to spend my last evening in town like this. Perhaps you don't understand what all this means to a fellow like me.
All this?
May I take off my coat?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Give it to me, Spencer.
No, I'll just put it over here. I guess I meant more than just your living room, Mrs. Perkins. And you sitting there in the rocker with your sewing basket and your pleasant old-fashioned things all around you. Come here, Fay, darling. Sit beside me. Do you mind if I hold your daughter's hand, Mrs. Perkins?
Perhaps it's my daughter who you should ask.
No, I don't have to ask her. I know that she likes it.
Spencer Grayson is a very fresh man.
Yeah, he is. But give me your hand. And let this fresh man talk to your mother. You see, Mrs. Perkins, the life I lead is so different from all this. On Monday, I'll be in my hotel apartment. Everybody will be very glad to see me. The doorman, the elevator boys, my housekeeper. They're glad to see me because they work for me, and I'm generous. And I'll go to the office, and at the office, everybody will be glad to see me because they work for me, and I'm an important man at the office. My boss will be glad to see me because I make money for him. And my clients will be glad to see me because I make money for them. And that's the way my days are filled up.
from one relationship to another that's commercial. Clean and pleasant, but nothing warm, nothing human. And on the other hand, I shall have my memory of this, of Faye's sister, Mrs. Fitz, Evie, and her Wednesday afternoon club meeting. The children ice skating in the afternoon, and the high school kids ice skating in the evening. The way everybody says howdy on the streets and smiles. The way all of you are yourselves, no pretense. Wonderful old Shuffle with his wonderful earthy way of saying things and seeing things. Willie Fitz, so generous and enthusiastic and cheerful. I shall say nothing of you two ladies. Do you see what I'm driving at? Do you see why I've dragged out my vacation day after day and week after week? This is America here. This is people. This is real.
I hardly know what to answer you, Spencer. What you say makes me very happy, of course.
Well, I've always found folks pretty much the same from one place to another, Mr. Grayson. New York or Rushville Center. The places change, but the folks don't.
Perhaps that's true. But when the folks are caught up in a merry-go-round, a rat race, busy chasing their own tails, then they've hardly got time to be folks. Won't you accept my guarantee that here, just in these past few weeks, I've met more human beings than I've met in 10 years in New York?
Well, then I'll say like Faye just said. It makes us real happy that you should think so. I'll go and put the water on for tea. No, sit still, Mr. Grayson. Then I'll come back and we'll resume our discussion.
All right, Mrs. Perkins. Thank you.
Maybe Mr. Grayson would like to play checkers, please.
Checkers, Mr. Grayson?
Checkers. Isn't that wonderful? Who in New York would even believe that in some homes they still play checkers? Oh, this is gospel truth, Faye. This is marvelous. This is wonderful. I never want to leave.
Spencer, if you never want to leave, why do you leave?
But I told you, darling, my job. These people insist on seeing me.
Oh. Yes, of course. Your job.
Somebody named Faye is feeling sorry for herself. This was going to be my big wow for the finish, Faye. But I'll tell it to you right here and now. I'll be back, you know. You don't get rid of me so easily. I'll be back, my darling Faye.
Ladies, if you want to save rinsing work on wash day and get clothes deep clean, too, try new deep cleaning Oxidol. This amazing new Oxidol washes clothes deep clean with just one rinse. Yes, with just one rinse, new deep cleaning Oxidol gets out graying dirt no rinse suds leave in. And with just one rinse, new deep cleaning Oxidol washes clothes cleaner of dulling film than any other leading soap with two rinses. You see, new Oxidol reaches deep down into the fibers, loosens dirt, and floats it away. That's why with just one rinse, your clothes look clean, feel clean, smell clean, because they are clean. Oxidol Deep Clean. And new Oxidol is wonderful for washable colors, too. So ask your dealer for this amazing new deep cleaning Oxidol. Remember, with just one rinse, Oxidol gets out graying dirt and washes clothes cleaner of dulling film than any other leading soap with two rinses. With just one rinse, new Oxidol is deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. Deep cleaning. And so Spencer has to go back to his job. But he promises Faye he'll be back. You know, I can't help it. I like Spencer Grayson. Don't you? Well, Faye tells us how she feels tomorrow. But now this is Charlie Warren inviting you to listen again tomorrow to Oxidol's own Ma Perkins. Same time, same...
I hope you enjoyed our soap opera edition of the Weekly Download. We'll be back next week with more great old-time radio, and who knows, maybe even some more Kevin Curtis. Until then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.